Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Gresh and Keith.
That bounce is well in front of the plate. Christian got a glove on it, but it popped in the air over his head and past the umpire. Is there any more rain than forecast?
I mean, I didn't even pack a jacket for a season until this year, so.
Uh-oh!
Andy Gresh.
Whether it's Jones or Fields, I'm New England, I'm making a move to get the quarterback.
My girlfriend, she makes me like 10 cookies every night.
Rich Keith.
I played a couple of them at Rock, Paper, Scissors. I'm going to be talking trash to him. Did you talk trash back to me?
The first part of being smart is knowing what to do.
Oh, boy.
Gresh and Keith starts right now.
Things could change today!
I'm about to crap myself.
On WEEI.
That is a very fair reflection of, well, this radio program. Welcome into the final hour, Gresh and Keith. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. Will you please? That's all you got to do. Tell a friend.
That's it.
That you like Gresh and Keith, or that you have made the switch here to us on WEEI, and of course, all over New England, Providence, the Cape, Springfield, Portland, up in New Hampshire, where they're blowing stuff up, and in Worcester and all that. We thank you for making us a part of your day wherever you are. Now, we have been the NFL draft watchmen.
I think
we have done as good a job of any show in town of breaking down the draft, not trying to club you over the head with it and bore you, but to actually give you some information and intel and not, you know, chucking stuff up against boards and things of that nature. And that gets us into today's breakdown. We did the corners. We did the wide receivers. Well, today it's about the edge rushers and the edge players. And before we start to get into the names, Rich, let's just start with this. At 15, we know they signed Matt Judon. They've been bringing along, you know, the Michigan crew, right? Those
yeah.
Winovich and people
Uche.
Like that. Josh Uche. They got Kyle Van Noy back, who we know can be an edge player and play inside. So is this a massive need, in your opinion, for this team?
I don't think it's a massive need, although I know it becomes very popular every season to say, oh, they need a pass rusher, they need a pass rusher. Even years where they had pass rushers, I feel like a lot of the calls
right.
we would take would say they need them. I also think the nature of the draft and the players available, I'm focused on the first round, and if you even want to kind of bleed it into the second round, I don't think you would want to extend yourself there for a pass rusher. It's not to say that they wouldn't always want to just beef up. And if you're talking about best player available, in my mind, at 15, I think it'd be a bit of a reach. There are definitely going to be pass rushers who go in the first round, like edge guys that we're going to get into that go in the first round. I feel like 15, to me, is probably a little too high. And, oh, by the way, I think you are still seeing what Josh Uche has, who was just a rookie a year ago. Chase Winovich, who, talk about all over the place. There were games last year where he felt like the guy got it, knew what he was doing. There were other games where if they thought it was a run situation, they would pin him to the bench
I'm
and he just never saw
him.
And you don't like him.
He's a bit player.
All right.
Ooh, he's got flowing hair. It's like,
you don't like the flowing hair.
It's like Garner Minshew.
Well, don't compare him to Minshew. Minshew's at least done more in the league than Winovich has. But Matt Judon, they threw a good pile of money at Matt Judon. And so I'm not opposed to them at some point in the draft going after another one of these edge guys. They can be very, very important if you get the right one. But at 15, I would not be thrilled with it there.
Well, there are also different kinds of edge players. There are those defensive ends where if you were to look at, for some people, the number one ranked quote-unquote defensive end on the board is the kid from Miami, Gregory Rousseau, who is 6'7", 265 pounds. Then you look at the number two guy ranked by most, which is Quiddy Pay, the kid out of Hendricken High School who went to Michigan, and he's at 6'4". And 265 pounds.
I don't want another, and this, again, probably is not fair to him, but I don't want another edge player out of Michigan. I'm not trying to win the Big Ten Legends division. I'm trying to win the AFC and then the Super Bowl. So I don't want Quiddy Pay, because we, one of the early mock drafts we looked at, and he's probably changed it since, but Phil Perry had Quiddy Pay going to the Patriots at 15, and I was just like, ugh. I would not be thrilled with that. But again, a defensive player would not be surprising by Bill Belichick. Even if you think the position for next year isn't in a bad place, they could always add another one of these guys.
Well, the trick in trying to figure out or parse through the who are the guys that are the real defensive ends and who are the guys that project to be kind of stand-up, quote-unquote, edge players. You know, like Micah Parsons on some people's list is listed as an outside linebacker at 6'3", 215 pounds. Same for Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, the kid from Notre Dame. He's listed at 6'2", like 215, at least according to the thing that I'm looking at right now. And wow. It's like, hey, wait a minute. I'm like, wait a minute, is that a typo? Should it really be 245? But we mentioned Zaven Collins. The kid from Tulsa was up to 270 pounds. And this is the complicated part, I think, for us on the outside of trying to figure out who would be stylistically the fit. Like, do they want more of a Micah Parsons guy who can play outside but rush the passer? Do they want the bigger traditional defensive ends like we're used to seeing? Like, even Richard Seymour, he could play inside.
Well, but that's the thing. Like,
the
what
more
a
you moved him out, man, his 6'6", 300 pounds was, it was a load to try to handle.
Yeah, I think that part of it's tough. I mean, you could even take it to, you know, offensive line, which we'll do tomorrow. But there was, when they drafted Isaiah Wynn, the first week of shows after that was, is he a guard or a tackle? And you would talk to one person, they tell you he's a guard. You talk to another person, tells you a tackle, and you're not sure. So the same thing applies to those guys. I would put Parsons and Collins and the kid from Notre Dame in a different category than the two guys from Miami and Quiddy Pay. I think the two guys from Miami, Quiddy Pay, a couple others that you can include in there, are more your edge guys. Where
Jalen Phillips is the other kid from Miami. That's the other big
name. Those guys, whereas Parsons, I feel like, probably, like, look at Devin White, or even look at what, you know, Dante Hightower does here. And sure, you can line him up all over the place. Bill Belichick loves versatility. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's going to want a guy that can do different things. Who, hey, maybe you're rushing the passer here, but we also need you to be good in the run. We also need you to be able to guard a tight end or defend against a tight end or a running back. Like, he's going to want all of that. But that's why the linebackers that you named there, I like more than these edge guys. I'm not sure how they would use them here. And I feel like you already have somebody in Uche who you're trying to develop, was just a second-round pick, so they obviously feel, or they at the time felt good about him. I'd like to see him get developed a little bit more than throwing another guy like that into the group.
How do you classify Dante Hightower? Because that's a guy who can play linebacker, but really I think his best role now might be as that edge stand-up defensive end.
Oh, interesting.
But from, well, because the closer you've moved him to the line of scrimmage, like, think about that Atlanta Super Bowl, right?
They moved him
all over the place. He was up playing the run. He was trying to hold the edge. He was coming off the edge in terms of blitzing. They had him blitzing up the middle. I wonder if they're maybe going to look for a guy like that, where you would say, okay, maybe he isn't the prototypical this, but because of the athleticism, he's got a lot of these things that we can do with
him. I still view Hightower as sort of a better version of Jerod Mayo, like a guy who makes more plays than Mayo, maybe even more like Brewski. Like, if you want to say they went from Brewski to Mayo to Hightower, so yeah, you can move him in different spots, but if he's healthy and plays the whole season, he's still that tackling machine. But he'll come up with a pick or a sack here or there, too. Like, he still has the ability to do that. It's not the fastest linebacker in the world, but is a smart leader of the defense kind
of
player.
Well, off of that whole smart leader of the defense, that's why when you go to six defensive backs and you're going to go to a pass rush group, let's call it, Dante Hightower for a period of time was the linebacker that they would leave in there, A, because he's the most versatile, but you mentioned it, the smarts. You could put him in the middle of the defense and he's not going to be out there reacting like a robot. Like, I thought at times when Jawan Bentley was in coverage, very robotic. He's like feeling behind him and stuff, whereas there's a lot of natural instincts there with a guy like Hightower, but that also in turn can kind of devalue the importance of the position, because if you're going to be playing with 5 and 6 defensive backs a lot, then in theory, the guys that are going to come off the field would be those traditional linebackers that you would normally see in this defense. Well, if you're going to shut that down to one, then it's how am I mixing and matching the rest of my group to be able to rush the passer. So it's more than just like the days of the 90s defense are gone, where you would just draft Ted Johnson and put him in there as a big thumper at middle linebacker.
Oh, you got to be a lot different now, especially every team's tight end can catch. Every team's tight end is athletic, and so they're going to have to do that. I also think, and if you are talking about the first round, I think Bill is going to want a guy that you can leave on the field more often, like kind of like what you were saying there.
You would hope to find that
guy. All right, it's one thing if Chase Winovich can only, you know, just passing down situational type player. All right, well, you got him in the third round. But a first round guy, and if he just all he wants is, you know, that one sack every other game, and he thinks he had a great season because he had 9 sacks, 10 sacks, but like what else did he really do? I thought Trey Flowers was pretty good. I like Trey Flowers. But I don't know, they had, you know, Tully Bantakane that one year that just had like 5 sacks in one game against the Bills.
Yep.
Like Mark Anderson and Andre Carter were okay. They had like good sack totals, but like I don't think they were the all around player. And so do you want that guy, or do you want a guy that's just out there all the time? And we also know a guy like Chris Long didn't exactly love being here because he was playing a position where, all right, here's your job. You're not necessarily going to get the quarterback every time. You might not have 10, 12 sacks and put yourself in a position to get that bigger contract, right? And so some of these rookies, it really depends on how they fit. So I personally think they'll probably avoid the position in the first round. But again, it's pretty impossible to predict what they're going to do.
And I guess a part of the tug here, Gresham Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, and by the way, the WEEI's coverage of the NFL Draft presented by Zuti. Build any application your company needs in 1 week. Get your free trial today. Visit Zuti.com for details. The fact that Belichick went to Miami and looked at both Gregory Rousseau and Jalen Phillips, and if we are to look ahead under that Mike Reese, you know, 2 year rule.
Yeah.
Right? Like, do you think Chase Winovich is really going to be around here long term once that deal comes up? Like, I like Uche. I think that's a guy they want to keep. But if they're going to have to start to make decisions on some of these dudes, and you think about Van Noy's here for 1 year, Hightower is in what, final year of a
Judon
deal?
Judon signed one of those, 3 or 4 years.
Judon
year
is going to be here a couple years, you would think. But do you need that guy on the other side of him? And, you know, like you and I think have talked a ton of draft. And we haven't even focused on this, which makes me wonder.
Good point.
Put it on the radar with this guy.
Good point. That's why I thought they were going to go corner, even though they have 2 corners. I know you've kind of looked at the linemen, even though they have a pretty good offensive line. But no, this could be a spot, I guess, if they value. Again, it goes back to the million-dollar question of what their actual big board looks like.
Right.
Because I know when I just kind of sat down the other day and was ripping off guys that I would like them to draft, I got easy 12 names that didn't involve an edge guy. But theirs could obviously be very different. They could have 3 edge guys in their top 15, and then they'll take one.
And the best one on their board might be sitting there at 15 where no one around is. I think Minnesota, just in front of New England, might be in play for one of those guys. But to the point, they could look at that group and say, hey, man, this is our 10th-ranked player on the board. And
I really – maybe Minnesota. But if you want to say there are – I don't know, maybe Shine might have a better idea. But anywhere between 3 to 6 – edge type players that go in the first round, the Patriots at 15 might have a chance at all of them, or maybe one of them is off the board. Is there a guy, Shyam, that you like, or actually, let me put it differently: is there a guy that you think is worth a top 15 pick?
I don't love any of these guys. Like, there's no Myles Garrett in this draft. There's no Von Miller in this draft. There's no guy that just would be perfect at pass rushing in general. I think there's some interesting guys. The guys from Miami are really like the 2 guys to watch out for, because I think either of them could go anywhere from 9 to 25. Like, it's such a wide range, right? It depends kind of what teams want to do. But a guy like Jalen Phillips has had a ton of injury problems in his career. He had like a scooter accident, retired from football due to medical reasons, and then came back, played for Miami because Gregory Rousseau sat out a season.
Got Belichick written all over it. A guy with a scooter accident who he thinks he can get good value on.
But like Phillips has a ton of potential. But again, the injury history is super scary. And then you look at a guy like Rousseau, who's absolutely massive. This guy is 6'7", and his wingspan is enormous. And so, like, the potential you can see there for a player at that position is massive, which is why, for whatever reason, Gregory Rousseau screams a Jerry Jones pick to me. It just
well, he seems the one that feels like that. Scout reports I've read on Rousseau is got the cliched raw with upside. And so that guy, that's the project
type
guy.
And he's just massive, like, and Jerry probably looks at him and goes, oh, that boy can rush the pass.
Yeah, he is a big fella.
I can go with that guy. Name is Quitty. I'm hoping he don't going to be Quitty on the Cowboys, but I think I just going to sell and take that Rousseau boy.
Quitty pay.
Him in there, too, would be great.
I think I don't have patience to jack with you today.
No jacking with you today, Sham. I ain't jacking with you.
I think the big issue for the Patriots, though, is none of these guys really fit what they want to do, right? Like, a lot of the top guys don't fit exactly what the Patriots do.
And it's interesting that you said that, Shine, because I think while there was there is about to be an offensive kind of tweak, revolution, let's call it, or evolution of this offense, I think defensively last year we started to see what this group was becoming, whereas a Bill Belichick defense used to really rely on those inside linebackers and edge rushers, and now it's going to be one or two interior defensive tackles, rotate the hell out of everybody else, and then play five and six defensive backs a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And to Shime's point, that's where a guy like Rousseau might not fit. And I also think, and again, value, everybody hates it, but when you look at the way they built these pieces on defense, they're really made to rotate. Like, even Shime just said, there isn't the one guy, and I know you mentioned the one guy you can leave on the field. I wonder if it's corners and safeties are the guys that you leave on the field all the time now, and a lot of your front seven dudes are going to be rotational players.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, I think, but again, do you want a rotational player? Can you get that type of rotational player in the second and third round?
Yeah,
that,
absolutely.
That's what I would say.
That's why I think this would be off the board. If they're going to look at either an edge or a linebacker, I think it's that, and I know we'll do linebackers next week, but I think it's the kid from Kansas, the Jamin Davis Kentucky, that they can move all over the place, and he kind of projects to be much more of an inside type guy. And if I were to look at just the way this defense is constructed right now, like, they got enough dudes that can play on the edge, especially with Judon. But they need that guy that they can stick in the middle, and that becomes your every down player, really, which is that backer that you hope never has to leave the field.
Well, and in an interesting player comparison, Jalen Phillips out of Miami, who could be the top edge guy.
Well, Hindu theory?
Some say Chandler Jones, which you could look at it two ways.
That's right.
One, the Patriots traded up in the first round to get Chandler Jones, but then two, they didn't like him enough to keep him. So was that a player, or was it off-field stuff and all that thing that he got into? Or was it the personality? The shirtless yoga in front of the police station?
Sure.
Like, was it that? Or was it that we don't want this player? Or did they just know that, all right, this guy's going to get 15 sacks, he is going to command a ton of money, and we're just not going to pay him? So I don't know if they changed how they feel about the player or if it was everything else.
Well, I mean, the only guy who had a metric like that in terms of sacks that I think they put any stock into might have been Hightower, right? Because, like, we flippantly, but I joked around about the whole Trey Flowers, right? Big sack numbers, see you later. They didn't pay for it. Chandler Jones didn't pay for it.
No, but even Trey Flowers didn't have a
Jamie
lot of sacks.
Jamie Collins.
Yeah.
Well, I think Flowers had, it was either 10 or 11 his last year here before he ended up going to Detroit. Like, there was enough for people to say, well, there's your pass rusher. He gets to the quarterback. I think the way they view pass rush, that sack stat isn't as important as
the
pressures.
It's definitely not. It's definitely not.
Yeah, sacks to them is like saves to most sabermetricians.
But they also know other teams will overpay it. Yeah, he hits Trey Flowers at 7.5.
Oh, 7.5. Okay.
So it's kind of in that Rob Ninkovich, like, he'll get you 8 every year in that kind of mold. But they liked what he did.
And he got $75 million.
Yeah. Because of Matt Patricia.
7 sacks.
Matt Patricia.
$75 million. That's the guy. So now we can almost, like, point to the metric. And if it's like, if it were LT and they were unstoppable, you know, like a, I would say a JJ Watt type, but even teams have slowed him down and he's had some injury issues. Like, if it was unquestioned, this is just the mother bleeper of all pass rushers, like an LT type who's a once in a lifetime, I think Bill Belichick would be very happy to pay that guy. Like, when LT even comes up, he's like, yeah, no one was LT. Like, don't even compare him to him.
Yeah, no,
because he realized how unbelievable. But I, but they again, don't pay Chandler, for sacks.
Chandler Jones is really, really good. Like, he had an injury last year, and he's had some injury issues. But he is on the all-decade team from the 2010s.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also a guy you don't take off the field. Like, I just pulled up in 2017. That was the year he had 17 sacks and led the league. Most games, he played 100% of the defensive snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a, hey, it's, oh, they're definitely running here. Let's get Chandler off the field. And I know they kind of moved him a little bit from where he was playing in New England to where he plays in Arizona. But the point is, that was the type of guy who it seems like every team in the league is looking for either a near shutdown corner or an elite pass rusher. Every team wants one. Every team is desperate for one of these guys. And I know that Chandler Jones was one of them, but they still felt, nah, we don't want to pay him. We'd rather pay Dont'a Hightower. And I don't know the answer. Was it more, we don't really know if we can trust this guy with some of the stuff that's going on, or
well,
or
I think there's a little bit of that, but there's also, I think, with this defense, a group pass rush mentality. And let's just go to the Texans for an example. At one point in time, they had J.J. Watt.
Clowney.
And then they had Clowney. And every time they came in here, what did we do? Ha! You guys ain't getting to Brady.
Destroyed.
You only got two dudes.
Destroyed Watt.
That's exactly right. I think their thought process is, it ain't about one.
No.
It's about six or seven or eight. And then let's mix and match all these guys to have like that speed pass rush group.
And one of the reasons what we heard anyway after the fact, which I thought was timely, but was when Jamie Collins got traded.
Yep.
It was because he freelanced a little bit.
That's right.
And so maybe a guy who in a contract year was trying to get some extra sacks or was trying to do that. Because that is also the nature of that position a little bit too. Like it can lead to being a bit selfish. Because what a difference that is. If you are 10 or more sacks in your contract year and you go to a round of teams and they're like, oh, look at this guy. He must be a great pass rusher, even though maybe he's not. Or maybe it's just a few plays here or against a bad opponent or things like that. Remember the year they got Adrian Claiborne? And it was
dude
had like nine sacks against one team. And you're like, and it was like a fourth string. He was playing for Atlanta, right? And it was against Dallas, who was down to like their fourth string left tackle. And they're like, look at him, he had all these sacks. And you're like, yeah, he stinks. The guy stinks. But it's a big difference. And so some guys will say, you know what, for team success. And that's what I thought Trey Flowers was. Trey Flowers was like, I don't need 25 sacks. I'll go out there, I'll play well, and still get your money.
Yeah, I just don't see the Patriots taking any of these guys anywhere close to the first round.
Mm-mm.
Like they just, if they draft a lineman, a defensive lineman at all, it'll be a guy that they can just rotate with Henry Anderson, Davin Godchow, and Lawrence Guy. All four of these guys that they will now have can play anywhere in those three spots.
And my hope at 15 early on in this process was that there would be a defensive lineman that would emerge. And it would be, all right, here is your interior. Here's your new Will Fork. Here's a new Warren.
Oh, there's definitely
not. Here's a new
not.
Danny Shelton type.
Yeah.
There isn't that dude. And that would have been the perfect use of the 15th pick would be to have, as we've talked about, like the linebacker you'd love to not pull off the field. You'd love to have an interior defensive tackle that in theory you wouldn't have to pull off the field very much. But that's just not going to materialize, unfortunately. Hey, the draft is going to be awesome. And by the way, round one is a week from today.
Thank God.
Can't wait.
I am really excited this year. And as all Patriots fans should be. I was always excited even when they didn't have a first round pick and they had their quarterback. But this is a completely different type of year for the draft.
No question. No question. And there's still more to come. I think there's going to be a ton of movement in the top 10.
Oh, I bet on draft night.
Yeah.
Falcons trade number four. It won't happen because they need to lock in whatever team is to see which quarterback is available. Who does San Francisco take? Because there's still some doubt there. But yeah, there'll probably be another couple of trades at least in the top 10.
You would think so, and I hope so. It'd be juicy, baby. Hey, listen to us wherever you go. Download the Odyssey app, and you can listen to Red Sox baseball on the Odyssey app as well. If you are inside Boston, if you are here in the city of Boston, you can listen to Boston Red Sox baseball on the Odyssey app, and you can find us, odyssey.com, weei.com/listen. You can also go to weei.com/watch as well if you would like to watch us do this show.
It's Midday Mania.
Unjustifiably in a position that I'd rather not be in. But the cream rises to the top
with Kresh and Keith on WEEI.
To name any starters at this particular time, we've been working with these guys for 2 days. right? We've been working with these guys for 2 days. My biggest thing is competition. It's, again, we've talked a little bit about my core values. It's my second core value. It's this team's second core value. Competition's a huge thing. And we're going to have competition at every position.
For every one of you out there.
Oh, my God.
For every one of you out there who gets upset, you're starting to sour on Belichick. You think that Belichick should get fired because he didn't take your favorite guy in the first round, whatever it is. Ladies and gentlemen, what you are about to hear over the next 8 minutes or so with Gresh and Keefe here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network is a reminder of what is out there. It is a reminder that there are some organizations in the NFL who have a guy like Nick Sirianni walk into the room and start to say some of the things that you are about to hear. It is time for this week's take that needs a 180, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss, who's now helped over 13,000 clients, including me, take control of their weight. See these success stories at awaken180weightloss.com and click to learn more to create your own success story. So are you ready for this, Rich Keefe, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles?
I'd like to hear all of his core values. He apparently has plenty, but number two we just heard from.
Number
but there
two.
Are a lot of core values, and I want to root for this guy because he's a D3 guy. He was a Mountain Union guy. These D3 guys don't have a great track record.
Ollie Marpet, the Marpet militia.
Ollie Marpet. But Josh McDaniels, Nick Caserio, Matt Patricia, this guy. Like, it's not, it's not going great
this
so
guy.
Far for the fellow D3 guys.
So, Nick Sirianni, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, you just heard right there, starting to preach core values. But, you know, this draft process, man, I'll tell you, this Bill Belichick, he's not listening to people. He's blowing fourth and fifth round picks. Maybe he needs a new age guy like Nick Sirianni to walk in the room to teach him about competition.
And I'll tell you, I think some of you guys are wondering, like, what game? We didn't go earth shattering on these games, right? I played a couple of them at rock, paper, scissors, right? That was as easy as that. Rock, paper, scissors. Let's see how competitive you are. I'm competitive. I'm going to be talking trash to him. Did you talk trash back to me? Right? Jeopardy. There's different ways to do it. It looks a lot of different ways. Because everyone's compete looks a little different. Like, if I get up there, I play them rock, paper, scissors. They got a little more creative than I did at times. So it was awesome, though, because it did anything you compete at. When you compete with somebody that's competitive, they're going to go at you no matter what, no matter what game you're playing.
The first part of being smart is knowing what to do.
So this guy won't make it through the year.
That sounds so dumb.
His opening press conference was comical. We spent like 2 days on it. It was so bad. My friend, who's a diehard Eagles fan, season ticket holder, he was like, I feel bad for him. Eagles fan. He was like, I feel bad for the guy. Like, he was just such a mess. You're like, all right, maybe jitters, maybe nervous, but just more of the same. Just more of the same. And you're not even doing like a real press conference. Like, there's a big difference between sitting at your computer. We've all done the Zooms, and you see 20 different Zoom boxes up or whatever, and you're just talking, you're in your house or you're at your facility or whatever, versus million cameras, million reporters, the bright lights are on you. Like, that's even a different environment. And this guy's a mess. And now he's getting his players to play rock, paper, scissors in Jeopardy because he wants to see how competitive you are at rock, paper, scissors.
Prospective players. Not even his guys.
Right.
They
are
prospective guys who leave that organization going, what did I just go through?
I got to go. I want to go to the Eagles. Not a lot of guys get fired in their first year. It's pretty rare. Sometimes they get fired after their first year. It happened in Cleveland not too long ago. But, man. This guy, I don't know how he does it. And oh, by the way, he's got this quarterback issue on his hands. It's not the most talented team to begin with. How much patience are they going to have with a guy that sounds like that?
We're going to have systems in place that are easier to learn.
What? Who's teaching them? You?
I mean,
good luck.
Wait a minute.
I'm ready to run through a wall for that guy.
I thought you guys told me those anonymous coaches that were interviewed were smart.
Those are quarterbacks coaches. This is a head coach.
This is a head coach. Former quarterbacks coach.
Yeah, this
head
is
coach right now.
This
he
is
wasn't one of the people interviewed.
He was. This is a guy
this
who.
This is the group. Actually, this is Point Shime. This is the group of guys that are below him that have the same job as him.
Well,
that
Howie,
were on that.
Howie Roseman is supposedly the smartest person the NFL has ever produced
was
with
he?
His drafts and
yeah,
his
right,
coaching
right,
picks,
right.
right? Like, I thought Howie
was that
Roseman.
Joe Douglas or Howie Roseman?
I thought Howie Roseman was like this genius. And the real issue, obviously, seems to be the owner, because you could see dum-dum Jeff Lurie, who's made some pretty bad decisions there, having this guy walk in the room and giving him the whole, you know, hey, I'm going to get you jacked, fired up, Mr. Owner Man.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
thanks
there is
for coming, Philly.
There yeah. is a difference, right? What do you want? Do you want the guy who literally still thinks you're punching guys in the mouth? Like, do you want that guy, like the old school football coach, or do you want this guy who just sounds like a bubbling idiot? I think I'll take my chance. Believe it or not.
What was Doug Peterson?
Chris Papangelo.
just an idiot, I guess. But
an idiot with a Super Bowl ring.
So
clown
no, no.
named
he's,
Mike Lombardi.
But so what would you rather have? You have to pick. Do you want the Dan Campbell or do you want the Nick Sirianni?
I want the Dan Campbell. Well, you know why?
You might be right.
Because,
I'll go Campbell all day.
Well, because the Nick Sirianni of the world is never going to be able to see anything another way. Like Dan Campbell, I would hope, where it was, Dan, in the 80s, you wore a freaking neck roll and we ran I formation all the time. You would think that the guy could at least grow a little bit.
I don't know.
And I can deal with the whole dumb lunkhead, we're going to be physical mindset. Right.
And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off.
This guy's biting kneecaps. The other guy's telling me about all his 20 principles that he has
pointed
out.
And that's the thing. Like, what does Nick Sirianni stand for other than bad press conference? At least I have an idea as to what Dan Campbell's about.
53 guys in the locker room.
Yeah.
My guess would be 20 would roll their eyes at Campbell and 40 would roll their eyes at Sirianni.
And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap.
Like, by no means are they going to win over the whole locker room with either of the mentalities.
Absolutely
be like, wait,
not.
This guy,
no.
Is this guy serious about this? You know, Dan Campbell's trying to like do two-a-days and work around all the CBA, trying to get him out there.
Like Bill does.
Oklahoma drill, first day of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. And then you have Sirianni, who I don't even know what that is.
What is
I don't know how you motivate a single guy like that.
What are they going to? They're going to sit in a movie theater and he's going to show them, you know, all of the stuff the coaches have been doing
gonna play
in his past.
Hungry, hungry hippos. They're going to sit around, True Little Pursuit.
Well, they're going to. Look at it in a new Vin Diesel movie, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Hey, it could be like Vin Diesel.
It's just, it's a mess. And how long is he the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles for?
A year.
Yeah.
It's a year. Because they make decisions like that down there. That's another thing about them.
Yeah.
I mean, look, did Doug Peterson screw up the end of the year? Of course he did. But I think Doug Peterson wasn't doing that alone.
No, probably not. No,
I'm
for
sure there
not.
Was
yeah.
someone in that organization who was like, hey, Doug, you know.
But I think even like how that organization dealt with Wentz, Foles, Wentz, Hurts, this next guy, like that's been a mess already.
Yeah.
Like how
they can't decide on a quarterback.
Right.
And it seems like they are drafting some level of, or drafting is not necessarily the right word. They're allocating capital to that position all the time. Like they turn around and draft Wentz high, and then they got to turn around and flip Foles, and they gave Foles a bunch of money. And
they also drafted Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson last year. The team desperate for a wide receiver.
And drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside the year before, 2 years before, sorry.
In the second round.
Yeah.
So they needed to talk about receiver drafts. Holy smokes.
Patriots
are like, look at you guys.
Yeah,
you
know, I know,
you
right?
You guys don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, the Eagles, they had that 1 year with Lane Johnson and the whole, we have fun here.
Yeah.
How fun has it been since there, Chief?
Are we ready to have the Patriots drafted N'Keal Harry ahead of Travis Fulgham conversation, though?
Travis
technically
Fulgham
Detroit,
is,
but he's on the Eagles now.
I know, he is better. But look at, so one of the reasons why.
These wide receivers, man.
Wide receivers are so bad. So
he's the fulcrum of the offense.
They drafted Jordan Matthews, who actually was good for like a year. Jordan Matthews was good for a year, but that was a second round pick that he flamed out. They drafted Nelson Agholor in the first round, who's now on the Patriots, but it was horrible for them. Then they drafted the guy
Nelson
with the
Aguilar.
Long, yeah, they drafted the guy with the super long name that Shine mentioned, and then they drafted Jalen Reagor.
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Arcega. They are worse than the Patriots at drafting wideouts.
Horribly worse.
They're worse.
Like, they take higher shots and fail more miserably.
But that's the problem.
Like, and they've won a Super Bowl in the last, like, 5 years.
They beat
years.
You. That's unbelievable.
How did that happen with the backup
Nick
quarterback?
Nick Foles.
Seriously.
And then traded him.
No, but that's what it is. You know what he is? Nick Foles was the equivalent of the goalie that gets hot and leads you to a Stanley Cup. That's what it was. He got hot for 3 games. That was it. And then turned it into $50 million. God bless him.
But then it's like but then you commit to Carson Wentz, and then a year later you're like, no, not him either.
Right. And you blow out the head coach who he was supposedly tied into.
And then you hire that guy. Then you hire rock, paper, scissors over here.
I can't imagine.
I love it, though. Angelo.
Yeah, I bet.
I can't imagine what it is like in Philly.
Is he going to have to do the Angelo Cataldi interview every week?
Yeah.
So there's more content for us.
Yeah.
We'll have to dip in to see what Sirianni's doing. Imagine him in that setting.
I can see Rhea Hughes just stabbing him in the neck, being like, you're so dumb. I can't deal with this. And all of a sudden, they just shank him, and that's it.
Maybe he won't be doing it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Or it'll be all on Zoom or whatever. But, well, hey, at least we have a year of Nick Sirianni to entertain us, considering, you know, we'll get some snorts every once in a while that'll get us excited here. But otherwise, we're going to be looking for all these head coaches, like the Nick Sirianni's of the world. You got something, and the Boston parlay is in effect tonight. However, you might need to tweak it. We'll discuss the options as we get ready to get out of here and hand it to OMF next.
Back to more Boston sports talk. Gresh and Keith on EEI.
So what do we learn today here with Gresh and Keith? We learned explosives that you and I weren't exactly exposed to, even though we were from our hillbilly parts of the world from our past.
Yeah, I was not super familiar with that, but that was up in the great state of New Hampshire, and it was Tannerite, which, thanks to Davey Eyeballs for texting this in, apparently, that was a gender reveal that we talked about. They blew up half a city block, it sounds like. Same explosives that Tiger King's own Joe Exotic would use for a lot of his videos.
Oh.
So you have that part of it as well.
We'd like to thank Davey from the Dork Podcast for that contribution as well. Also, the Dork Podcast YouTube channel up and running for those of you who would like to subscribe. Time for You Got Something, brought to you by Unified Office. If you run restaurants, you know the busy signals and placing customers on hold means lost revenue. Let Unified Office help you maximize sales at unifiedoffice.com. Keith, you got something.
I do got something. It's the old Boston parlay. It seems like we've had a bunch of these over recent weeks. One of them hit last week. One of them hit. Another one would have hit if you tweaked it a little bit. So let me give you a couple of options today. So Red Sox playing the Mariners, Celtics against the Suns, and the Bruins against the Sabres. If all win tonight, just win, $100 would win you $313.67. Now, the reason why it's not more is because the Bruins are such heavy favorites against the awful Buffalo Sabres.
-320. It's a huge money line.
Tweak it just slightly if you want. And if it's Bruins by a goal and a half, -1.5, that will get your odds to 100, winning you $484.75. So an extra $170 if you think they're going to win by more than a goal.
And if I may,
which normally I wouldn't do, but for the Sabres, come on.
Well,
I think you can.
I'm sort of thinking along the lines that you are. My tweak to the old Boston parlay, as I've got the old Sportsbook Rhode Island app up right now, I would go under the Buffalo Sabres game to under 5.5.
Oh.
Red Sox on the money line, -170. And then give me the point and a half with the Celtics, -110. Your 100 brings back 466.
Okay.
So,
yeah, so
Celtics plus under the Bruins game. Right. I mean, do we think Buffalo is, first of all, do we think the Bruins are going to score six? And win like 6-0. I don't think so. But are the Sabres good for like 2 goals?
No, I do feel good about the under. I'm looking at same odds for Bruins -1.5 or under 5.5.
Yeah, -115, I think.
So you can pick either one. Whatever one you're more confident in is gonna give you back the exact same
odds. It's the Celtics plus that 1.5 that can give you the little tweak there. But anyway, a plethora of options on the
good luck out
parlay
there. Yeah. Let us know how you do tomorrow.
Shime, you got something?
I sure do. I want to wish a very special happy birthday to one of my favorite actors, the one and only Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Well, I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
He's been in so many classic spots. One of my favorite shows of all time, Supernatural. He played Sam and Dean's father, John Winchester. He's also played Negan in The Walking Dead,
yes.
Which I know you are back,
I'm back in on. I was told to get back in on it. I was reluctant because it was so bad in season 8, but I'm back in, and I've been binge-watching that. And so, yeah, he's good in that. He's also married to Hillary Burton.
Ooh, look at that. Well, happy birthday, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. John, you got something?
I do. So, a TikTok user named Jamin_Spen does a series called Acting Performances That Are So Good You Forgot That They Were Acting, and it kicked off sort of a trend where everybody will do the TikTok version of a quote tweet on his video and basically do another one. So it started off super serious, and you were actually like reminded of some classic performances that maybe you didn't consider at the time. Andrew Garfield in The Social Network, when he finds out that they're kicking him out of Facebook, is one of the most mesmerizing scenes I've ever seen. I actually looked back at the Oscar noms for that year. Did not even get nominated.
Not
for
a
supporting,
sniff, huh?
Which is insane. That was the Christian Bale year when he won for the Pride of Lowell, Dickie Eklund, for The Fighter. So
he was really good in that.
Probably
though.
Would not have. Andrew Garfield
wouldn't
probably
have won.
But so
good
I'm gonna,
for you!
So I'm going to apply this to a topic that we talked about earlier, which was gender reveals, because I think former Celtics player Gordon Hayward had one of the best acting performances ever in a gender reveal.
What's an acting performance that was so good you forgot it was acting?
Say, Daddy, can you help me?
Help me.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Whoa! It's a girl!
Yay! You want a girl?
Brittany, you were right.
Is Daddy happy?
Daddy's always happy.
Daddy's full of
crap.
Daddy's
about to break out into tears.
That was like his eighth daughter, too. He clearly wanted a son.
He grabbed a son, though, in there, right?
He did.
Wasn't that
he
last
did.
Year at the bubble?
So this is his third kid, I believe, which was a daughter, and then he did.
So he goes, girl, 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 boy.
Get a bubble baby.
Keep firing away. You get one eventually.
There you go, Gordon.
Is that your theory? Is that how you're going to get the Keith kid?
Yeah. See, I don't care, though, about boy or girl. It didn't matter. Didn't matter to me then. Doesn't matter to me if we're lucky again.
There you go. I am trying to appeal to some in the dork world with this.
All right, we're all ears.
But it is sad news for residents of Arizona because the legendary action star Steven Seagal, who may have given up hope for running for governor in the state because he has put up his 8,973-square-foot mansion in Scottsdale up for sale. Now, the alleged cryptocurrency expert purchased the property in 2010.
Seagal is?
Yeah. For more than $3.5 million, he's been trying to unload it since 2012. He's lowered the price. Keith, it's on 12 beautiful acres located almost 3,000 feet above sea level in the guarded and gated community of, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Carefree Ranch Homesteads in Scottsdale.
Mm.
That sounds more like the home he would be sent to as he would lose it in later years.
I was going to say, he also, this is a great line from his Wikipedia page. From 1996 to 2018, multiple women have accused Seagal of sexual harassment or assault.
Oh, yeah. He's not a good dude.
Horrible guy.
Yeah. His house overlooks the desert mountain in the Phoenix metro area with floor-to-ceiling windows, Keith, made of bulletproof glass.
Well, just in case.
I mean, you never know when the people are going to show up there.
Yikes.
It is actually a... well, it's a fully bulletproof compound as it's being marketed. So I know that in New Hampshire, they're rocked by termites or whatever the hell, the bombings up there and explosions. Maybe you wouldn't have to worry about
that. That's a good point.
Would buying Steven Seagal's house be of any interest to normal, movie-watching human beings?
No.
And we're not in 1997 with this guy, right?
It sounds like, though, if you are one of these doomsday preppers... It could be. If you're worried about the apocalypse, if you're somebody that has like a lot of spam.
Are you?
I'm not really. I mean, I have a plan, but I'm not like, I don't have like a bunker or anything.
Keith gets it.
I get it.
I have a plan.
I got a plan, but I'm not going to like wait, I'm not going to spend all my money on
get
that.
Get in the car and drive to the hills? Is that really what
it is? No, you want to go somewhere warmer than that, because if you're out there with no electricity in the wintertime, you're not going to survive.
So you consulted
here.
Garrett Richards on this.
Pack a jacket, Garrett. It's going to be real cold.
OMF coming up here at the top of the hour. We are back tomorrow. We will have Week in Review. We'll have what we're watching this weekend, all of our normal ridiculousness. We will take a look at the offensive line as the NFL draft watchmen continue. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Gresh Keefe. OMF is next. We will see you tomorrow, 10 a.m. Don't be late for a fun Friday.